Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 60 years ago today, 1948, David Ben-Gurion let the world know that a new Jewish state was born in the heart of the Middle East.
We hereby proclaim the establishment of the Jewish state in Palestine to be called Medinat Yisrael, the state of Israel.
Israel, the country, has been studied, celebrated, loved, hated, attacked, and protected like no other. Its achievements have been enormous. So have been and are its challenges and the hopes and fears over its future. Israelis, Palestinians, the United States, the world all have a stake. This hour, On Point, Israel at 60. You know, we often put a pretty tight frame around our focus here. Today, we're inviting a broader conversation with two very interesting guests. My first, joining us from New York, is Bernard Avishai. He's a Canadian-born Jew, now a citizen of the United States and Israel, who makes his home in both countries. He's a consulting editor at the Harvard Business Review. His latest book, just out, is The Hebrew Republic: How Secular Democracy and Global Enterprise Will Bring Israel Peace at Last. Bernard Avishai, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
And with me in the studio is Edgar Caret. He's been called the most important writer in Israel today. His latest collection of short stories just out in the U.S. is The Girl on the Fridge. He's also director with his wife, Shira Geffen, of the new film Jellyfish, now playing in theaters around the U.S. It won the Camera d'Or at last year's Cannes Film Festival for Best Debut Feature. Edgar Caret's parents were Holocaust survivors. He is often described as the voice of a new generation of Israeli writers. Edgar Caret, thank you so much for being here.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Bernard Avishai, first to you, because you've got a very explicit thesis, a kind of a prescription, a big-time prescription for Israel right now. Let's hear it.
Well, I suppose the important thing to keep in mind is that the term Hebrew Republic is really not a description of something in the future. The Hebrew Republic exists. Israel is already, the Hebrew version of the global thing. It has an extremely vibrant Hebrew culture. It has writers, of course, like Edgar Caret are sort of manifest demonstration of that. It's also made a tremendous success of globalization. Israel is, a place where 3,000 startups have built companies across the world over the last 20 years. There are 200 Israeli companies listed on the NASDAQ. Israel is a place where Israeli entrepreneurs are perfectly at home in all parts of the globe, and the cosmopolitan nature of global companies blow back into the culture in ways that would have been unimaginable 20 years ago.
And in that, you're seeing kind of a signpost and direction for the future. You first went to Israel in 1967,
yes,
on the heels of, I guess, the 67 war there, to kind of volunteer, stand up, here I am, I want to help. And have followed, lived there off and on quite a lot, and followed it closely ever since. Now here we are, 2008. How's your understanding of the fact of Israel and the challenge of Israel changed over that time, Bernard?
Well, as I was saying, the Hebrew Republic, the Jewish and democratic state, already exists. The problem that I saw back in 67 and began to, examine more and more closely over the last couple of generations is that at the same time as you have this Hebrew democracy working and succeeding, that Hebrew democracy also encases the residue of a Zionist settler state which produced David Ben-Gurion, who you heard at the top of the hour, a Zionist settler state which was put together in the Mandate period in order to be a scaffolding for this Hebrew state to arise. The problem in Israel is that that scaffolding state was never retired. So at the same time as you have this wonderful Hebrew country working in the background, I mean, in the foreground, of course, people are always talking about the peace process and the problems with the Arabs in the region and so on. But in the background, there's this sense that the Hebrew Republic has risen. At the same time, however, you have this residual Zionist settler state, which was put together in the 30s in effect to make the Hebrew Republic possible. It was never retired. And the institutions that were built then, which really privileged Jews above non-Jews for all kinds of reasons we could go into, today acts as a discriminatory apparatus that's systematically alienating one-fifth of Israel's population. So you have the paradox of this multicultural Hebrew-speaking society, which is at the same time a Jewish state of a kind that actually discriminates against non-Jews and is creating an internal alienation in an increasingly large proportion of its own population.
Are you saying on Israel's 60th anniversary that it's time to retire or reshape the Jewish state?
Well, I think the problem is there are two Jewish states. There are two Jewish states. There still exists a part of the country which defines itself as Jewish insofar as the state apparatus is discriminating against against non-Jewish individuals. That part of the state apparatus has to be retired. There needs to be a separation of religion and state. There should be no public education system supporting an orthodox religious system. I mean, the public school system in Jerusalem is really interesting. If you look at the first grade in Jerusalem, 45% of children in Jerusalem public schools are going to ultra-Orthodox schools, state-supported ultra-Orthodox schools. Another 15% are going to national Orthodox schools. 30% are going to Arab schools. And there's 10% left for a secular Hebrew school system. This kind of thing is terribly explosive. This is going to create a terrible problem down the line. And if you sort of extrapolate from that to the country as a whole, if the West Bank and Gaza simply disappeared, were sort of relocated to the moon, Israel is going to have another intifada in another generation from its own internal Arab population. And this is avoidable. It's avoidable. And it requires rethinking, along with the peace process, it requires rethinking the civil institutions of the country, which qualify Israel as a more sort of ordinary liberal democracy of the kind that you find all over the European Union.
Edgar Caret with me in the studio. What about that idea of Israel as a more ordinary liberal democracy of the kind you would find in the EU? You're Israeli. You're in the States for a few days, but you live in this society, this country. Is that Israel's future? Is it its fate, or will it always be on some singular track?
Well, again, no. I agree with many things that Bernard Avishai is saying, and I would love to live in a normal state. I don't know if it will happen in my lifetime. I agree a lot with what Bernard Avishai said is the fact that Israel was formed on one way and now it finds itself facing another reality, and the way that it was constructed becomes a problem, because the thing is that when Israel was formed, it was formed around ideology, because there was people coming from different diasporas not speaking the same language. So they put the Zionist ideology somewhere in the middle, and everybody kind of gathered around it. And with time, they kind of needed that ideology less. You know, Israel became more capitalized, and this ideology kind of disintegrated. And what we have now is that kind of a bagel structure that everybody is facing the middle, where the Zionist ideology is supposed to function as a center. But now this ideology isn't there.
Like a bagel with a hole in the middle.
Yeah, so we're all staring into that hole. And what happened was that if in 48 people felt that ideology is the only thing that can keep the Jews from the different diasporas together, now actually ideology is what fragments the society and what causes tensions inside the society, because unlike other countries, it just kind of can refer to the fact that we have like a joint history together, in spite of our differences. In Israel, the ideological issue is basically the main issue. You know, I'm saying when you go on a first date, somebody wants to take you on a blind date, mm-hmm. the first thing you ask was, what party did she vote for? You know, and I'm sure that, you know, in the U.S. you can find Democrats dating Republicans, you know. It's a
here and
this,
there.
This can happen. You know, usually they ask, you know, is he good looking or what mm-hmm. is he working at or is he nice? Does he have a bad smell from his mouth? But in Israel, ideology stayed a central thing. And right now, that thing that was supposedly supposed to turn us into this homogenic society is kind of tearing us apart.
Edgar Caret, with me in Boston, it's so good to have you. I know you ran through quite a traffic jam to get here. I'm glad you made it. And Bernard Avishai in New York, please stand by. Behind me right now, sound from a little before that date in 1948. This is November 29th, 1947. Crowds of Jews in Tel Aviv in the middle of the night celebrating passage of the UN vote to partition Israel. They danced the horror in the streets and began singing the Jewish national anthem. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Israel at 60. It's life beyond the headlines. It's way ahead. My guests are Edgar Caret, short story writer, top young Israeli writer. With me here in the studio today, his latest book, collection of short stories just out in the United States, The Girl on the Fridge. His movie now in theaters around the United States is Jellyfish. We'll talk about both of those. Also with us from New York is Bernard Avishai, consulting editor at the Harvard Business Review. First went to Canadian-born U.S. citizen and Israeli now living in both the U.S. and Israel. First went in 1967, been following very closely ever since. He blogs at bernardavishai.com. His new book is The Hebrew Republic, How Secular Democracy and Global Enterprise Will Bring Israel Peace at Last. Here's some interesting tape from the 1960s, when he was years out of office. President Harry Truman, before his death, spoke about the birth of Israel and the stakes in 1947 when the United Nations voted for the partition of lands that would create Israel.
The vote was coming up in the United Nations for the partition of Palestine, where this should be divided into Jewish and Arab states. There was no other basis. We had to divide the thing into two countries. The kettle was boiling. The whole business was very discouraging. There was always worry of war in the Near East with the Arabs and the Jews. I used to tell them that if the Old Testament was correct, they were first cousins and relatives, and they ought to be able to get along if the rest of us could get along with them. And when the hate generations are all dead, they will do it.
Harry Truman talking in the 1960s about his memories of the creation of Israel. Edgar Caret, Israeli writer, is with me right here. Son of Holocaust survivors, there's the former American president, very instrumental in this time, Harry Truman, saying, when the hate generations, he called them, are dead, better relations will come here between Israelis and Palestinians. You're seen as a voice of a new generation, Edgar. What about it? Is the passing of time, the passing of generations, improving the prospects for peace or not?
Well, actually, I think it's making things worse, you know, because if in the past the Palestinian and the relationship between Palestine and Israel were on kind of daily basis and they knew both sides, you know, even though Israel occupied territories, there were this kind of personal communication. Now I think that the only Israelis that the Palestinian sees are the soldiers that break into his home, and probably the only Palestinian Israeli we see would be a terrorist getting into one of the Israeli cities. I think that what Truman didn't know about is the idea of blood feuds in the Middle East. The thing that we're very, very good at is kind of revenging things that happened decades and sometimes centuries ago. So the hate generation may die, but the hate itself keeps on living.
Bernard Avishai, you're pointing to the tremendous success that significant parts of the Israeli economy have had in the high-tech area, entrepreneurs there mm-hmm. pushing into all kinds of great success in the global success, globalization, the cosmopolitanism that comes along with that as these Israeli business people are all over the place in Europe and the U.S. and the Far East. You're pointing to that as this sort of avenue of hope here, saying, let's dial down the Jewish state aspect here. Let's dial up that cosmopolitan face and a more secular democracy. You call it the Hebrew Republican. What does that mean, though? You use it easily, but I'm not sure everybody will follow it.
Let's go back to what Edgar said, the wonderful metaphor of the bagel. Everyone's sort of looking at the center where this so-called ideology has disappeared.
And yet he says ideology drives everything, including who you'll date and what you'll talk about in the first minutes of your day.
Well, yeah, but here we're using ideology more like political affiliation. You know, Democrats date Democrats, that kind of thing. I want to offer a different metaphor because I don't think that it's true to say that the ideology has disappeared. I think the problem is the ideology has completely succeeded. And I don't think it's sort of a bagel with a hole in the center. It's more like fish in water. I mean, the fish don't know that there's such a thing as water. Israelis by now, very few of them, pay attention to the fact that the ideology that created the state was this notion of a Hebrew enlightenment, which is to say that Jews could be modern by creating a national home and a national culture which would allow people to pursue their religious imaginations individually and not through any kind of orthodox system. I would challenge the idea that I'm calling for a less religious country. I'm not talking about toning down religion. I'm talking about creating a secular framework which will allow religion to be voluntary.
But it's a Jewish
state, which sounds
like it.
Which will allow people to pursue their religious imaginations in their own way and in their own congregations. The state apparatus should not be in the business of dictating a particular religious view. And there are many people in the Orthodox community who look forward to a time when Orthodoxy would not be a state religion. People like Yeshayahu Leibovich, famous philosopher, used to say it should not be a state religion because that will allow religious freedom to really become creative. So I'm not talking about making Israel less Jewish. I'm talking about going back to an original Zionist idea, which is that the way to be Jewish in the modern world is to create this Hebrew culture into which everyone can marinate and pursue their identities,
including Arab Israelis. Including Arab Israelis, you're saying?
Yes, of course, including Arab Israelis. There's an interesting poll. Look, it's obvious that Arab Israelis have a tortured relationship with Israel. But it's also true that after three generations, there are a large number of Arab Israelis who understand Hebrew civil society as a huge opportunity for them. Another friend I'm sure Edgar knows, Said Kashua, whom I interview at length in my book, is a very interesting and maybe somewhat extreme version of this. And what he says, but this has been confirmed in many conversations I've had and in polls, the Arabs of Israel find in the Hebrew language an opportunity to talk about their fathers without blushing. It's an opportunity to talk about sex. It's an opportunity to talk about liberal freedoms and democracy. Arabs read Yediot Achronot at lunch. They'll watch Al Jazeera at night, and a lot of them feel a lot of tension here. But the idea that somehow the Hebrew civil society is something into which Arabs cannot assimilate is a terribly anachronistic idea. Polls, one interesting poll done by Professor Sami Smucha in Haifa University. He said that he polled Israeli Arabs and found that 45% of them feel closer to Jews than to Palestinians. That's not really so hard to understand after three generations.
60 years. I want to begin to bring our listeners into this conversation. We have Melissa calling from Franklin, Massachusetts. Melissa, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for having this topic on today and this wide-open discussion. Basically, I just want to affirm that this is absolutely a day for celebration and reflection, and we ought to be applauding Israel as the only real democracy functioning in the Middle East, however imperfect it may be, just as our own democracy is far from perfect. And if we stop and look at where Israel is, in a very short history of 60 years, I think it's light years ahead of many other democracies that we applaud today. If we ever stopped and looked at what was going on in the United States 60 years into its history, certainly we know about 100 years into its history, we had the worst civil war ever, and 200 years almost in the 60s, we still had terrible racial strife, and we still have severe racial and economic disparity, and we are going on 300 or whatever. So we ought to really just rejoice in where Israel is, not stop there, but acknowledge it for what it is and get out of this mode of reporting the worst and the dreariest, much as our media here does in the United States with urban crime and so forth, because it's easy to forget that there is a life going on. There's a vibrant culture, and people are living and going to school and marrying and working and praying or not. And all this is going on where all we see are the wars and the bombings and, oh, my God, it's so terrible. But there's a lot to rejoice there, and I think it's very easy to forget.
Melissa, let us pick it up right there. You're looking at the accomplishments and celebrating them, and that's easy to understand. Edgar Caret, at the same time, those difficult headlines that Americans see a lot of are unavoidable in a way. There's an unresolved conflict here. Both things true at the same time. Part of what you've done as a writer is said, let's look at the actual day-to-day life and pay attention to it. Melissa says what should be celebrated here is what's been achieved and the democracy that Israelis have achieved. How do you respond as an Israeli?
No, I think that, you know, of course I love my country, but with me, when it comes to birthday, for me birthdays are kind of not exactly happy days, you know, on my own birthday. I always kind of think about the last year and what I did, which I could do otherwise. And I think that in Israel there is this great tension between great democracy and liberalism, and, you know, and the fact that we are in constant conflict, and, you know, and that we found ourselves in the occupied territory, occupying people who wants to achieve their freedom. I don't think that, you know, I don't think that there are any easy solutions to this problem, but for me, looking at Israel, I'm proud of many things, but there are many things that I'm not proud of, and it's difficult for me only to kind of rejoice and be happy. I just feel that we have a lot of changes that, you know, that we should deal with before we can just be happy.
Bernard Avishai says, let's look to more democracy and a more secular tinge to the democracy in Israel as a way forward. A couple of years ago, you were in the States on the air talking with Terry Gross, my colleague at Fresh Air. And you were talking about your sister. You have a sister who's ultra-Orthodox and a brother who's kind of at the other end of the spectrum. But you said to Terry Gross, actually, my sister doesn't believe in democratic society in her neighborhood. She lives in a theocratic society, and she thinks it's much better than democracy. She thinks democracy is not such a great idea. It ruins the idea of community, you said then. Is that still her view today? And how does that stand up against what Bernard's suggesting?
Well, you know, I think it doesn't stand up against what Bernard suggested, because basically, let's say, me and Bernard being secular Israelis, of course we would like to live in a secular state and not in a theocracy. Of course I would be happy to live in a society where everybody holds the same ideas that I do. I think that Israel is a country of very strong contradiction. When people ask me about Israel, I always say to them, imagine a country that is so conservative and religious that we don't allow public transportation on Shabbat, on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, imagine a country that is so liberal and open that when there is a Eurovision contest, we send a transvestite to represent us. So what is this place?
To be the singer on stage in Eurovision.
Yeah. So what is this place? Is it Iran or California? You know, what is it? What is this kind of pepperoni and ananas pizza place we're living in? And it's a place of a very strong contradiction. And in my personal family, kind of having my older brother, who is the head of the legalized marijuana movement and a very strong social activist in a group called Anarchists Against the Wall, and having my sister, who's an ultra-Orthodox, who lived for a long time in the territories and has 11 children and 2 grandchildren at the age of 45, being a liberal left-wing myself, having parents who are Holocaust survivors and were in the Irgun, which is basically a right-wing organization, for me, the only way of surviving this is kind of understanding that there is something that goes beyond the political and ideological spectrum. You know, when me and my brother would go to visit my sister at Emmanuel, a settlement, my brother would say, you know what I like about this trip? Mm. That it's the only time that I go beyond the 67 lines and don't return handcuffed in a police car. So there is this thing, that you know, that I think that what's important to Israeli to understand is that they can disagree about things without kind of dehumanizing the people that they disagree with.
Bernard Avishai Edgar Karet says, you know, what is it? Is it Iran? Is it California? Let me put it to you, what will it be? Iran, California, both? And if you had your way, where would it go?
Well, look, first of all, I agree with Melissa. It is a birthday and worthy of celebration. And none of us would celebrate birthdays if they were rewards for virtue. I also sort of sympathize with her fear that in talking about Israeli democracy in this way, you know, it may undermine a certain amount of support in this country, which tends to think about democracy as good, not democracy bad. Therefore, you want to support the people who are democratic and so on. That's not at all the way I'm using the term and meaning the problem. I'm not trying to reward countries now for how democratic they are and try to win points in American public opinion. The problem in Israel is that its democratic defects are creating severe future problems for it, which comes back to your question. The future is, I think, summed up in the following algorithm. You can't have an economy like Singapore and a nationalities war like Serbia. I mean, at some point, the system begins to implode. And in order to get out of this Serbian-type Balkan war, you have to begin to understand the needs and rights of the people who are affected by the institutions of the state apparatus. And I'll give you another example.
Who are you talking about there, the needs and rights? Is that everyone? Is that some group in particular?
All citizens of Israel. I'm assuming that the Palestinians will eventually have some kind of entity of their own which will be federated with Israel and Jordan, at least economically. That's, I think, a given. And all the Palestinian entrepreneurs and leaders I know in Ramallah, in the Palestinian Authority, are speaking this language. They know that this is not a question of, well, if we stop hitting each other, maybe they'll let us alone. You know, it can't work like that. There's got to be a great deal more cooperation over jurisdictions that have to be shared and cannot be separated, like water and telecommunications and labor policy and currency and things like that. There's got to be a more federal idea in the future, like the European Union has proven to us. But at the same time, there's an internal Israeli structure that has to be rethought. I mean, 90% of land in Israel, for example, is administered by the Israel Lands Administration. Again, something that came out of the mandate period. Land is national, and it's administered under the custodianship of the Israel Lands Administration, which sees itself as custodian for the Jewish people. You still have old Zionist organizations sitting on planning boards, making decisions about how the Galilee is going to be developed.
Bernard Avishai, we have to take a short break.
And in some cases, you don't even have Arab mayors on these planning
boards. Hold the thought, if you would. Bernard Avishai's new book is The Hebrew Republic. Edgar Karet is with us. His latest is The Girl on the Fridge. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Israel at 60 years, six decades now, since its creation, 1948, on the Hebrew calendar. Today is the day, and there is a lot of celebration going on in Israel, picnics and parties and flyovers and military bases thrown open and all kinds of stuff, you name it. We're looking beyond the headlines today at the way ahead with two interesting guests. Edgar Carrit is with me. Salman Rushdie calls him brilliant, the voice of the next generation. He's had all kinds of praise inside and outside of Israel. His latest collection of short stories released in the United States is The Girl on the Fridge. He's also director of Jellyfish, just won the Camera d'Or at Cannes Film Festival for Best Debut Feature last year. Also with us is Bernard Avishai, Canadian-born, Jewish, now a citizen of the United States and Israel, and has lived in both a lot, now divides his time between New Hampshire and Jerusalem. You can join the conversation. What do you think? Can Israel finally be a full democracy and a Jewish state? Do the demographics make that possible? Principle? What about Edgar Carrit's generation? Could it move out of endless conflict mode? Does a new generation in Israel have a new identity, a new view of what it means to be Israeli? And what about the Palestinian perspective on this day? After all, it's hard to separate. Of course, the story of Israel locked in a kind of yin-yang relationship with the story of the Palestinians. Here's a moment from the 1950 documentary Sands of Sorrow, describing the plight of displaced Palestinians.
No home other than a tent or cave. No food other than that which is donated to them. In these camps of misery live the scores of thousands whose native land was for centuries Palestine. Then the tragedy of war descended on that holy land and made them wanderers.
Celebration today, but it's hard to disentangle all the history here at the same time. Let's take a call from Ames, Iowa, and Kit. Hi, Kit. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Kit. What do you know?
I wanted to respond to an earlier caller to some extent, but also just to keep in mind that we have built up a mythology around Israel. Israel isn't the only democracy in the Middle East. As a matter of fact, it's virtually surrounded by democracies. Lebanon, Turkey, Syria is a constitutional monarchy, and we would view the UK as, you know, very similar. There was allegedly elections in the Palestinian Authority. Iraq is allegedly a democracy. The other thing is we don't keep in mind that when the independence war was fought, many people were forcibly expelled from Israel. And those, we still are dealing with those things. It's just about, the point I guess I'm trying to make is that it's time that we have a little bit more conditional support and not believe in a great mythology about this being such a country like our own.
Bernard Avishai, let me put that first to you. What do you say to Kit's perspective?
Well, look, to be a democracy, you need more than one election and a president for life. When I think about the word democracy, I really mean more than just an electoral system or the shadow of an electoral system. I mean a genuine civil society where people have an understanding of the rule of law, judicial systems, individual rights, and so forth. And if we had to sort of grade the countries in the area, I don't think there's any question but that Israel is the most democratic. In fact, Israeli Arabs in this sense are voting with their feet. There have been all kinds of suggestions that, the Israeli Arabs be annexed by some future Palestinian state. And the Israeli Arabs are themselves in revolt about this because they know that Israeli democracy is real and it's a great opportunity for them. They don't want to go to live in any other country because they want their freedom.
The correct looks at least north toward Turkey and says, let's be careful with our very sweeping generalizations. Many votes over many years in Turkey, for example.
Yeah, but Turkey is a Muslim country and it's in Europe. You know, I'm saying there is a geographical issue. There is no to say that Turkey, you know, is close to Israel. It's like to say that Greece is close to Israel. I don't think that Turkey is very much relevant to our discussion.
But what about the idea?
I think it is relevant insofar as Turkey has been doing some things to qualify itself for the European Union. And if we were having a discussion about Israel along the lines of Turkey, I think, you know, we'd realize that most of the things I'm suggesting is just a question of bringing Israel up to code. You know, Turkey is in some sense a pathbreaker because it shows that you can have a state with a very large majority population rooted in a particular culture with a particular religion, but you also can have a state apparatus that qualifies for inclusion in a European Union with a Charter of Human Rights. Mm. And I would love to see Israel not only do the things Turkey is doing to qualify itself for the European Union, but I'd love to see Israel not only be in the Eurovision Song Contest, but also be in the European Union.
Wow, Edgar?
Yeah, I must say that there is something about the discussion here is that it's a little bit like being in the U.S. and giving marks to other countries if they are more democratic or less democratic, if they are nice people or they are not nice people. If I may be blunt and say something very reductive about Israel, I think that in Israel there is a great contradiction with the fact that we are an extremely liberal and democratic country. And in the same time, as Bernard Avishai said, there is a great discrimination against those who are not Jewish in it, and we have the issue of occupation. Those are two, for me, there are two strong facts. You know, sometimes I find myself people arguing, I don't know, about the nature of other countries. You know, comparing Syria to the United Kingdom is completely ridiculous. You know, I'm saying if you try to be homosexual in Syria or be homosexual in the UK, then you see that there is a big difference between the two. But we are not here, if we talk about Israel, we are not here to give bad marks or good marks to our neighbors. We're just talking about our own responsibilities and structure. It's true that Israel is liberal and democratic in some sense, but it's true in the same time that it occupies the lands of other people and doesn't allow them freedom. And I think about the issue of the Israeli-Arab, it's difficult to separate it from the Palestinian issues because I think that the Israeli-Arabs, under any condition, will never feel a happy partner of a country that they feel that occupies the brothers. That's something, those two issues should be solved simultaneously. And of course,
I agree.
Yeah.
Our caller, Kit, says we have to be careful not to be prisoners of mythology at the same time as we celebrate and all the rest. Edgar, I wonder how you see that. As Israeli, when you're in the United States, do you see Americans, American Jews? Never mind giving marks, we're looking for clarity here. Do you see Americans with a clear-eyed view of what's going on in Israel? There was an incident, just a moment, you were in Connecticut, New Haven, a few days ago, I think, showing your movie, Jellyfish.
Yeah.
And you described to one of my producers a moment where, some students there, I think, walked out on your remarks or on the film at a certain scene. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, I was screening the film at Yale, and two people, I don't think there were students, started shouting at me because there was a scene in the film where a young couple gets to a hotel and they have a very bad room. And
they're in Tel Aviv, they're on their honeymoon, it just turns out their travel plans are messed up and it doesn't turn out to be a great hotel.
Yeah, so they have a bad room, they switch them to even a worse room. And at that point they left, they said that I'm a part of Palestinian conspiracy.
Because you showed a shabby hotel room in Tel Aviv.
Yeah, it was, according to them, a plan to convince Americans not to come and have vacations in Israel because they are horrible hotel rooms. But I must say that when I screened the same movie in France, I had people blaming me for being anti-Palestinian because there is a Palestinian director who make a bad production of Shakespeare's Hamlet, and they said that my subtext is really saying that Palestinians can't direct Shakespeare. You know, I think that there is this problem, that there's always this issue, are you anti-Palestinian or pro-Palestinian? Are you anti-Israeli, pro-Israeli? And I think that these terms in itself, it's very reductive and it kind of avoids a discussion because, you know, I'm not anti-Israeli or anti-Palestinian. I think that there are some issues that should be changed.
Let's take a call from Cambridge, Massachusetts, and Shalom. Hello, Shalom. You're on the air.
Hello. Compliments on your excellent reporting from China.
Oh, thank you.
I am calling from what has been called the People's Republic of Cambridge.
a little bit of liberal politics there some days, yes.
Yes, yes. And I am a secular Jew, so I should be delighted by your guest's comments. I am delighted by Edgar's stories, which I have read, some of them. Mm. But I have problems. And let me wrap my question briefly around Leibovitz. Shayao Leibovitz was one of my teachers and friends, and I knew him for years. And he was indeed for democracy, but he happens to have been, in addition to his medical degree in cancer research and six doctorates, he happened to be very deeply steeped in Jewish learning. One of the courses I took with him was Maimonides. His children, he taught of Saturday afternoons, Talmud. So if Yeshayahu Leibovich is living in a secular state, his deep Jewish background, and he was a practicing Orthodox Jew, is there. If you
Do you see a contradiction there? Is that what you're pointing at, Shalom?
No, I'm coming to my question. Mm-hmm. If you remove the uniquely Jewish aspects from Israel and just have secular state of people, not present company of your guests, but people who are much less steeped in Judaism learned, you are left with the hole in the bagel and nothing else. And this is the end of Israel as a Jewish state, which some people will be happy with. So, and some people suggest that there should be a joint binational state, which, of course, by demographic differential birth rate, as Yasser Arafat said, our women's wombs or vaginas will conquer Israel by reproduction. This will be the end of Israel. So my question really is, what, without the learning of people like Leibovich and without being steeped in Jewish tradition, what would be left except in the hole in the bagel?
That's great. Shalom, thank you very much. Bernard Abishai, how about it? If you achieve what you're looking for, are you left with just the hole in the bagel?
No, of course not. I mean, this is now the third time I'm saying it, so let me say it explicitly.
Many people have read you and thought that. I mean, I'm looking here at David Billet in Commentary Magazine. He says, you know, he's very critical. He says, you're looking to take away the very sort of Jewish rudder of Israel.
No, I can't really respond to a particular review here. What I think needs to be said again and again is that the state of Israel will remain a Jewish state. The Hebrew Republic is a Jewish state. There's nothing in the separation of religion and state that will lead to the curtailing of Jewish learning.
What about demographics?
If you are an Orthodox Jew, or you wanted to practice any form of Judaism, or if you wanted to learn Jewish history, where would you rather be but in a Hebrew-speaking society? I mean, the problem is not whether or not Israel will be a Jewish state. The problem is whether we're going to attribute to the state apparatus the moral responsibilities for the moral personality of a human individual. A state is not a person. A state is something that enables people to be themselves. It's not something that is supposed to teach individuals the kind of Jew to be. It's supposed to be a context in which Jews voluntarily create all the institutions they need to be as Jewish as they want to be. And here, you know, come back to Edgar. Edgar is making the point again and again that Israel's a very plural society. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But it needs to be pluralist as well.
Edgar, do you see a contradiction between demographics, democracy?
I can only say that, repeating the question, that if I had to be conquered by someone, I'd rather be conquered by a vagina.
The writer speaks. There's literature. Let's get a call from Denison, Iowa. Cheryl, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Very much enjoying the conversation. One thing I want to say is that as you folks all celebrate the Israeli birthday, I think that a program needs to be devoted to the Arab Israelis and to the Palestinians, to the Nakba. We need to hear their voices in the United States as strongly and as loudly, even though many of the things that the two guests this morning are saying, I think many Palestinians could agree with. My niece was killed in the Gaza Strip 5.5 years ago. And just this year, the State Department says about Israel.
Killed? How was she killed?
Run over by a bulldozer, U.S.-made bulldozer.
Your niece is Rachel Corey?
That's correct.
The American who was there, the famous story,
correctly.
Yes?
Correctly. Her book, My Name is Rachel, Let Me Stand Alone, is just out, printed by Norton Publications. If people are interested in following Rachel's reporting from the Gaza Strip.
We take it. Our time is short. The book is up. But you're we only have a couple of minutes. In a nutshell, Cheryl, what are you saying?
A democracy is based upon justice. And when the United States State Department says, we have consistently requested that the government of Israel conduct a full and transparent investigation into Rachel's death, our requests have gone unanswered or ignored.
Cheryl, our time is short. Edgar Keret, it's a hard reminder on a day of celebration, an anniversary, but there it is.
No, and that's what I think. I think that, you know, it's not only a day of celebration, it's a day of retrospect. And I really think that, you know, that there are many things wrong in Israel, and those things should be changed.
Are you optimistic as we sit here on this day? Some people worry and say, well, we don't even know about Israel's future.
Well, in Israel, you have to be optimistic to survive. If I would have been pessimistic, I would be already out of there. You know what I'm saying? I really believe that there is something fundamentally good in humankind in general and in the people who are in this country in particular. It's just that sometimes I think that all the bad things that happen around, they just come from more from a fear and anxiety than, you know, from evilness. You know, it's just that I think that this conflict between the Jewish and Palestinian people, these are two people who've been prosecuted for years, who suffered a great wrongs at the hands of other people. And I think that this suspicion and fear just keeps on breeding violence. It is really sad because I really think that in the Middle East, almost everybody knows what would be the right solution. But there is such a strong distrust between everybody that we cannot get there. When you see negotiation failing, I think that they fail less on the facts, you know, on the conditions of the deal, and more of the fact that really Palestinians don't trust Israelis and Israelis don't trust Palestinians.
On this anniversary day of celebration and retrospection, as you say, I think we're going to have to leave it right there. But it's been a fascinating conversation, and I'm grateful to each of you. Bernard Avishai joining us today from New York. The new book is The Hebrew Republic: How Secular Democracy and Global Enterprise Will Bring Israel Peace at Last. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Avishai.
Thank you.
And Edgar Keret with me in the studio. His short story collection is The Girl on the Fridge. The movie is Jellyfish. Edgar, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.